Welcome to Illuminated, the 12 Months of I podcast. This month, we're exploring inspiration with our guest, Elle Benson, founder of Nonprofit Leadership LLC and renowned consultant in organizational development. Elle's TEDx talk, A Crash Course in Learning to Laugh, has made her a sought-after keynote speaker, inspiring audiences around the world. She's also an author with books like Cultivate Your Happiness, Mama to Be, and Cultivating Calmness in Children, which I absolutely need, offering practical strategies for daily well-being. So join us today as we chat with Elle about finding inspiration and cultivating happiness in our lives. Welcome to the show, Elle.
Thank you for having me. I couldn't imagine a better place to be right now than talking about inspiration with you.
Well, I was ridiculously inspired after our coffee chat that day that we literally had to tear ourselves apart from each other because we hit it off so amazingly. What I love about you is you exude joy and you have children. So,
laughing because I'm like, oh, I'm joyful in spite of them.
Well, I really wanted to get into kind of what you talk about in your books, in your keynotes, and the kind of take it off from there, because I think that you are very inspiring, especially in the science of happiness. Tell us about that.
Well, absolutely. So how I got down this path of science of happiness is I was having a weekly book club with my delightful friends. And they say you are who you surround yourself with. So I was like, I found successful, phenomenal, beautiful women to hang out with. And I was like, I'm not becoming more successful and I'm not more beautiful, even though I'm hanging out with these women every week. And what I found was that our weekly sessions had turned into griping and moaning, complaining. And I thought, this isn't the group I curated. I am in awe and I'm inspired by these women. I want to do what they're doing. I want to live their lives. And I thought, why am I the happiest person in this room? Like, I couldn't understand. And so that, along with an MBA in leadership, I went down the path of positive psychology to get certified and to become a research expert on what happiness is. And what I found out is that, oh, the reason that I'm the happiest person in that room is one, my genetics. Happiness is 50% genetics. So, well, hence meet my mother, who is the most optimistic, happiest person ever. Okay, I've got that genetic. And then what also makes up our happiness is where we put our happiness. I'll be happy when. I want to obtain. I want to work towards something. It's usually circumstantial. So it's income or sometimes we can't even change it. It can be the family we're born into, the neighborhood we live in. That's only 10% of our happiness. And so I thought, okay, well, we've got 50%, we've got 10%, that leaves 40. What is the 40%? And those are intentional thoughts, actions, and behaviors. And that's what makes us happier. And I thought, okay, I am doing things differently in how I live my life. And it all has transpired since my book club.
That is awesome. So kind of finding the negativity with others was spurred you to find happiness in your own life and how to share that. One of the things we discussed, which was super awesome, was the study you're doing right now on happiness in conjunction with, is it Belmont University?
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about like this study and this book that you're writing and how do you like test happiness?
Right. And so I am a happiness consumer. From podcast, books, research, I have spent 8 years consuming happiness. I'm like, okay, I'm an expert, but I'm officially a happiness researcher now. So as I teach on happiness, there's something missing. I was like, I can't find specific data and interventions on how novelty affects happiness. And I've looked and, you know, it was really validating to hear from other researchers say, you need to do that. That research is important. And so I found a couple things on novelty. One was they tracked the GPS locations of people's phones in correlation to their happiness level. And they found that people who traveled in furthest distance and with a high frequency of leaving their home, they were happier. Well, my conclusion to that is because we meet new people. We open our minds to new things. We have new spontaneous things that happen that we didn't expect when you get out and do new things. And so for me, like, how can we take that small data sample and create interventions to test people's happiness? So Sonia Librinierski, she is the guru. She is the all things of happiness. Sonia Librinierski, she's amazing. The how of happiness, the why of happiness. She has done the most research on it. And she puts together this equation that is happiness is reality minus expectations. And so often we engage in our day-to-day with high expectations. We assume, we expect, we want, we crave. And so reality can never meet that. So when I study happiness, I thought, okay, I think there's something here to this novelty. There's also something to how we show up at events and how we engage with others. We have an elated expectation. It's outsized beyond what reality can ever come to. So I said, I'm going to host novelty labs. And a novelty lab is where I will say, hey, Debbie, come on May 15th at this time. And you go, well, what are we doing? And who's going to be there? And where are we going? And I go, I'm not going to tell you any of that. And so I create monthly novelty labs where people find out 1 hour beforehand the address. I might tell them to bring something they don't actually need, and I might try and throw them off. But last week we had a phenomenal event. It was so great. We did coffee tasting and cupping, like how to become an expert in coffee, along with how to pour your own latte. So here in Nashville, Glass House is a wonderfully creative space. Wyatt is the owner, and he wants to curate experiences that change lives. And so when I met him, I thought, how can we work together? And he is as passionate about coffee as I am about happiness. I don't even like coffee. And I was like, we're doing a coffee cupping. And so we got to smell it. We learned how to taste it, how to properly brew it, and compared three different types and take notes and look for flavors. And also, I have a new respect for coffee. I'm still not a coffee drinker, but it was really fun. I think there's a lot to sensory experiences in relationship to happiness too. So that'll be part of our study. And they thought that was the activity, but then I go, but wait, there's more. And they have a phenomenal professional latte maker and espresso machine and all this stuff. So everyone got to step behind the bar and be a barista and pour their own latte and work on the art and what shape and design they wanted to make. And some you could tell was a flower and some you couldn't quite tell. But anyway, it was that experience of doing something we've never done before.
Right. That is awesome. I love that you just brought that. I passed Glass House today twice on my way to a breakfast and coming home, and I go, that I need to go there. So I think that was a sign. I need to bring this up for some of my events that I do. I want to bring up especially the industry that I work in. And that's another thing you've seen me talk about this as well, about the meetings and events industry and event planners. And a lot of the times we forget, why are we doing this? And I think that, you know, there's always the ROI. What is the return on investment? But I do think that sometimes we forget that the return on investment is the happiness factor. When you bring people together in a room, what are they getting out of it? Were they happy to be there? Were they happy to learn something? What did they learn? What was the feeling they got? And I think that that actually is the return on investment rather than the monetary. Can you speak to a little bit about that as, someone who speaks at events to people and then trying to have them leave there with a sense of happiness? Like, how do you feel about, you know, why do we come together in different places for events? Why do we even do this?
What is the why? And as an event planner, you're asking the right question. And I've been a nonprofit capacity builder. It always goes back to the why. Why is it important? What is going to be the lasting impact? And let's start and back off from there. And so often I think people kind of like chuckle and give me a cute little wink, like, hey, you're the happiness chick. Like, that's cool, being happy. And I'm like, yeah, that's great. But the benefits of happiness can change our community. So those who are happier have researched, proven to have better health outcomes, better productivity, lower chronic stress, lower reduction of heart disease and all sorts of things. I mean, there's 100 different things that is the benefit of having and developing happiness routines. And so I'm like, it's not just like, oh, I want you to be smiling and laughing. It's also contagious. And that is so important. So when people say, you know, our house is really stressful and struggling, or the school, or my community, or let's talk about work stress. Like, I want to talk about how we as individuals can change our happiness, because it is 10% contagious to those we spend time with. So if, and I think maybe why people like to hang out with me, I'm real happy, but they then become happier because I'm happy. And then I love translating that and inspiring them to find their happiness. So I'm like, I know it sounds crazy. The happiness chick wants us to be happier, but it will change communities if everyone is a little more intentional on the thoughts, actions, and behaviors that improve our well-being. But also, we are in a crisis of isolation right now with the lowest levels of happiness. 2 weeks ago, the International Happiness Report has come out, and we thought there's going to be some improvements. We're 4 years post-COVID, and no, we as a country have depleted and decreased in our happiness even more than in 2020. Like, it is a true crisis in our country right now.
Do you, from your research in that and those numbers coming out, I really did feel like, okay, that was a low point for people during the pandemic. But I also think that people were able to find themselves, which did increase happiness, where they were let go of like bad circumstances, toxic jobs, like, oh my gosh, I would have never quit this job, but because I got laid off because there's a pandemic, or, you know, kids right now are probably at their highest stress level because they're dealing with a lot of the post right now. I see it in my own kids. But right now is, I think, that pinnacle of seeing the effects that happened. I know now that when I go to events, it is sensory overload. And not giving me free time, not giving me the time to decompress, brings me to a place of overwhelm and actually depletes me, which will bring me to a sad or a depressed state. Do you feel that because we came out of a place where we were kind of given permission to have a little free time, and now we're coming back to, oh my gosh, we have to get back to the work and make up for it, is that the reason why we are at the lowest happiness state right now?
A couple different factors. And I think when we look at 2020, I think you've got two different camps of people. You've got people who say that was the worst thing ever. And then there are folks like me who say, of course, it was a terrible time, but actually it caused me to reflect on my career, spend more time with family. And I had people in my household, those in my network who didn't have children or didn't have close family connections in their home, it was really a really rough time. And their mental health suffered even more. So I redefined my values. And now, okay, 4 years later, what the lessons learned from COVID, we're going backwards. So COVID, I was out, you know, four nights a week doing networking and professional development things and connecting. And I thought, oh, now I'm home with my family. But now I look at my calendar, I'm like, oh my gosh, Debbie, I'm out three or four nights a week every again. And now we've got even more. So the commitment, the time, our expectations have changed, but also social media and cell phones. Mm-hmm. These darn devices are so damaging to our happiness. And the happiness data really shows at the invention of smartphones, because our connection to technology and needing things instantly and just relying on this device plus social media, those two things are just detrimental to our health. No, I'm the happiness expert. And let me tell you, I still carry this thing around with me all the time. Like, I know it's hard to break up with our phones. But until we can create healthy relationships with our phones. And then I also just think our communities and our work are not helping and creating the right systems for us to spend more time with those we love. So happiness 101, easiest way to happiness is gratitude. Developing a gratitude practice, changing the neuroplasticity in our brain to be grateful, like gratitude. But the deepest levels of happiness, the happiness that transforms our health and can add 10 years to our lives, are healthy relationships, are having, being seen and heard and understood by someone with deep intimacy. I mean, our community and those that we know, I can say there are few people who really have the time and investment in those relationships. So that I'm like, I don't have a solution.
Right.
That's what the data is showing us.
No, I totally get it. I try to connect with people, and I'm, you know, as an entrepreneur, as someone who's trying to, you know, starting this revolution in the events industry, that's what I call it. I feel like I'm out a lot talking to people, but they're not deep, meaningful relationships. And there's, you know, networking, there's forced networking. I'm just like, I just want to have a coffee. I had a 2-hour breakfast this morning with someone that we have had to cancel and here and there. And I was so grateful to actually sit with her today. And, you know, we work in the industry together. Our bond came really close during the pandemic because we're like, oh my God, what are we doing? And we both bloomed out of it and our friendship bloomed. But one of the things she said today, she's like, as things are getting better and things are coming back in my life, I'm just exhausted. And exhaustion is the first thing for me that just rips out any sort of happiness because I'll snap at my kids and I'm like, I have to go to this event. And I'm realizing now is that being in control of my own calendar is the one factor of happiness for me. And I'm like, is that necessary? I ask myself questions. Is this helping me to the next level emotionally? But is this helping me in my career? Is this helping me foster relationships with my children? Is this helping me foster relationships in my community? And that could be entrepreneurial events industry. I have to ask myself those questions every time an opportunity is presented to me. How does redefining in the way you were saying, redefining your benchmarks of happiness, like play a factor into creating happiness?
Yes, I love all of that. And as you're talking, what you're doing too is redefining those expectations and setting boundaries. And so anytime I'm like, I'm dissatisfied, I'm unhappy with myself or others or the circumstances, I check that equation and go, okay, in my expectations, did I have elated expectations or did I also not communicate those boundaries? And did I not work within my values? And so I've got a client right now that is really pushing my values and what I'm comfortable with. And that's where you really get you're in conflict with yourself when you're not working and being within your values. And so I'm like, values, boundaries, and expectations, they're all intertwined. And so I am a conflict avoider. I'm like, I'm the happiness person over here. I do not want to have an uncomfortable conversation with anyone ever. But if I don't do that, then I'm in conflict with myself. Mm-hmm. And at that point, now I can't sleep. And if we don't, mama doesn't sleep, nothing is good. And so I'm like, there are non-negotiables for me. Like I am going to be in bed by 9:30 five nights a week. Like I may go out and do something, but I will be home. I'm wrapping it up early because that's a value. You know, working with others who don't share my values for how we show up and treat others, integrity and respect, that's a non-negotiable for me where I will enter in an uncomfortable and conflicting conversation that I would rather avoid, but you've hit my value. And knowing what our values are. And so you're speaking my love language. You talk about like autonomy of schedule. Like that is something that you cherish. And so be mama bear about that of like, no, like protecting my time is protecting your wellness, which is supports everything else that you do. And so you're going to set communication and expectations and boundaries around your schedule. And I support that. And you do not have to give explanations or excuses or answers. No is a full sentence, and you protect your calendar.
I love that. So I have put on my calendar days like Monday is Marketing Monday, Tuesday is CEO day. I do networking on Wednesdays. I only take appointments pretty much on Wednesdays and Thursdays. And Friday, I've always put as my sanctuary day. That is my day that if I have to get my hair done, I want a massage, I want to read a book, I want to have breakfast or lunch or coffee with somebody. Those are the days I kind of choose what I'm doing. And that was really freeing. But what really freed me was something I started doing last week was my out of office. I would just not put an out of office and I'd be like, okay, I got an email, whatever. I got to go take care of it. No, I put my out of office and I tell people I am doing I'm refreshing, relaxing, blah, blah, blah. And you know what? Here's a really great book that I love. Why don't you like go run out and get it? Today I put on, or, you know, on Friday, today is a Friday. We're recording on Friday, which I love my happiness conversation. That's why I allowed it. But when I went out to breakfast with someone, I put who I was going out to breakfast with, her company, and also that I was recording the podcast today. Like I gave ways that people could connect with me instead of being, I'm just out of the office today. Talk to you later. I really was telling people like an in-depth, like, this is what I'm doing to make sure that my Friday counts for me. And maybe you should rethink the way you do a day of your week as well. Because what we're finding is everyone I talk to is they're busy, they're overwhelmed, they're stressed out. But it's like, I walk around people like, how do you do it? I'm like, I just do it. I make it work. And this has not been like, I turned on a switch one day. I have my non-negotiables as well. So I really love, you know, setting up boundaries for yourself.
Yeah.
I would love to know kind of when you talk to your clients, how do you kind of find out, is there like a scale of happiness? How do you inspire people to get to that level? Are there people you just can't get there? Are there people that are just so negative in the world, you cannot get them to see the joy of life?
Yeah. And so I think of my biggest case study is my husband. I mean, we are so different. I am exuding sunshine. I mostly wear yellow. I'm energy. I'm extrovert. And he is like, I don't need no friends. I don't want to talk to anyone. He has been in the same job, in the same company. He's moved up, but for 19 years. Like, he is comfortable with what he knows. He has his same best friend from elementary school. Like, he does the same thing. So I think of like, those are the opposite. Those are the people who can spiral a little bit quicker and who don't seek out happiness, or it doesn't come genetically quite to them. And so those are those who I want to study. And so within our research at Belmont, part of the pretest is looking at the 5 big personality types. So we can define, okay, of these novelty labs, are we getting all L's who show up and they feel amazing? Or are we getting individuals who are wired differently, because we as humans are all different and complex? And so there's an extra layer to the research that's never been done before. But what I've seen with my husband, it has been something he would never seek out, and it is forced fun. And like, you will have fun at this. For example, on Wednesday, we went to a TEDx Nashville event, and we love going to those. I love going, and I bring him, and he doesn't want to go, and then he loves it anyway. But we go to the session at a brand new restaurant that's opening up, and it's like all new, like all my kind of things. And the speaker says, okay, you are at specific tables and there's an activity and you're going to talk for 45 minutes with people at your table. And he gave me daggers. Like, he gave me a look like, what did you bring me to? I've had a rough day at work. My phone's blowing up. It's 7 o'clock at night. I want to have a drink with my wife and not meet these two gentlemen across the table from us that has nothing to do with it. So, I was feeling his angst and energy, but there's like curated questions we're supposed to talk, and it's all about like storytelling. And his sort of phrase was, your new best friend is just behind a story. So really fun. I was nervous the whole time that the car ride home was going to be really long because he wasn't going to like it. But we start engaging. We're meeting these two gentlemen that we have nothing in common with. One gentleman has lived in a van for the last 4 years that he outfitted, and just like super cool life. Another guy had driven here from Atlanta to come to this event, and he's in tech sales. And we're like, cool, totally different people than we engage with on a day-to-day basis. And we had a great conversation. And to where when they like rang the bell that it was done, he didn't want to stop talking. Like, my husband kept talking, and he was so fascinating. He had extroverted and shared stories more than I've heard in years. Like, and so afterwards I was like, how was it? And he's like, okay, I really enjoyed myself. And I was like, yes, you admit it. Like, the doing the things that you think you're going to hate, engaging with people, trying new things, being vulnerable and brave to show up. We don't want to do it, but we know it's good for us, and we've never regretted doing these new things. So he's my case study, but also I hope within these novelty labs that we get a diversity of people and thoughts. But a week ago, I went to happy hour with all the second grade moms. We were home by 8, like, let's be honest. But we all got babysitters and we went out, and there was this one mom though that was driving me crazy. She was just a negative Nancy. Anything I talked about, anytime I started, she was like, no, that's just silly. Oh, well, that's ridiculous. Oh, that's just awful. And just, I like, it almost ruined my night, because I'm like, let's yes and people a little bit here. Like, you don't have to live my life that I do. Like, part of my research is that I try something new every day. I've done over 200 novel experiences in 2024. And I'm not saying that's for everyone, but there's something to be learned from this. And yeah, she was poo-pooing on my enthusiasm, which was draining. And so there are people like that. And I've now come to be, when someone's very different than me, and I have curiosity as a value of mine, I always want to understand them deeply, is I can observe, but I'm not going to absorb. Mm. Like, I've set my boundaries. I'm not going to let your scarcity mindset and your fear of trying new things dwindle my fun.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's really interesting. I really want to go back to what you just said about that lady being negative, and also about what you said at the beginning, which is that, you know, your DNA can dictate your positivity and negativity. Now, okay, growing up, I'm a New Yorker. Everyone is known, I guess, in New York for being, you know, very negative. I have very negative family members that think I'm crazy sometimes. Like, no, I'm going to do it. I'm taking over the world. I'm going to own a $1 billion company. Like, you just watch me, you know? And they're all just like, no, it's never going to happen. Who do you think you are? Like those are the people that, like, literally I have to start cutting out of my life, because if I have any value in what they say, will bring me down. And can it be regional? Is it inherited, when you say it's in your DNA? I know that there is a science to this about generation over generation, that people are just getting more negative, and that we have to boost ourselves to be more positive, because people, you know, from the Great Depression, you know, like that era, like, there's, like, literally people that went through really bad times that passed on their negativity. Is that any truth to that?
Oh, absolutely. But also, we as humans, how we behave, and it's the formative years. And so often what we do and how we show up is mirrored behaviors from those we grew up with. And so often, yeah, there's actually a happiness gene, but it's also, you know, you could have been a foster child or adopted, and those norms of those you lived with, it is mirrored behaviors. It is in our framework of what we see and how we show up. And so, but you are who you surround yourself with. So what I had found with that book club is they were negative and always just picking and, oh, what can I whine about? And then I'm like, oh, well, I need to add to this conversation. What negative happened at work to me today? I was like, no, it shows up, and we as energy meet people where they are. And so we have to protect our energy when we come up against those people who are just living in their own toxicity. And my heart so bad wants to break down that barrier and help them. But if people don't have the motivation to change, there's nothing you can do. And in my full-time job of helping nonprofit organizations have more impact, that is something I now apply to if I will engage with a nonprofit or with a leader. What is their motivation for change? Because I can't spend my wheel and energy, and I got a lot of energy, but I don't want to deplete it if someone doesn't want the help.
Yes. Oh my gosh. You know what kills every time when I talk to a client? Like, I have the choice now. I love that I have a choice to be like, I'm not going to work with you. You do not fit my values. But one of the things that will kill every conversation is we've never done that before. Or that's not the way we do things. I'm like, and why did you call me? Because seriously, the reason you called me, because something's not working and you need my help. So why would you come at me with the first thing is when I have an idea to kill it? And I think also in leadership, I think that is something that we're really failing, you know, by hiring people and bringing them up the ranks, or people that are becoming, you know, having their own business and now in a position of leadership, is how do we train people and teach them that you have to listen, take it in, and not be negative, because we're in a different world. Now, But there's a caveat to that, because I also see that my children think that they, you know, the participation award for me is kind of like, you know, I feel like you still have to work for things. You don't just get things handed to you. I think that our kids kind of got a little lazy, you know, like, oh, you know, millennials, I hate to be like that. But like, there was the factor of, oh my God, everyone needs to be taken care of. We like need to, like, no, that kid's not trying. He's not bringing it to the table. And I think that there has to be some sort of something in the middle where we have to learn how to bring people up positively, but not give everyone the participation award for just showing up.
Yeah. And the study on grit is what really helps me. And I'm almost like want something bad to happen to my daughter at school, because I'm like, she can be resilient from it. She can develop a growth mindset, because that's how we change our understanding and ability of what we're capable of doing. And so when we look at this graph of happiness, of, okay, when positive things happen, okay, you get a promotion, you make more money, you have a baby, you get married, all these sort of things. We go back to our baseline happiness no matter what. So I'm always like, ride that high as long as you can. With gratitude, you can sustain it longer, but like, you will come back to your baseline happiness. But also when negative things happen to us, and so we think being laid off or election results or a divorce, and we think like, I can't come back from that, that would be the end of the world. No, we as humans are resilient. We come back. And so it's being able to tap in. Now, most people will come back and are resilient, but some people can get stuck in that victimhood of woe is me, everything happens, but they're not going to get out of it until they do the internal work to understand that a lot of these problems are going to find them until they develop the skills to cope.
Right. And that's what I did. You know, I was felt a few months ago, I was just going through a lot of like, woe is me. I had bad, like my business partners weren't helping. I was working for them. I was stuck in this. They're completely against my values. What do? I can't get out of this. And I took a step and looked at my emotional loop, where I was like, okay, where's my start? It's anxiety. I was so anxious. I had to take medication for it. I was just very anxious and having panic attacks, which would in turn go to anger. I was getting angry at people because I was anxious. I was like, well, why aren't you doing what I want? And I was like, why isn't anybody listening to me? Which got me angry. And it was just this loop, which is the woe is I. But until I started refocusing my emotions to a positive emotion, to really focus on that, did my life change? And, you know, doing daily things. And it's you have to train your brain. Like we train our body. People go to the gym every day. But it's like, if you're not training your brain, none of it's worth it.
Well, and that's what's so cool about neuroplasticity is truly 10 minutes a day of a meditation will create new neural pathways and change your brain. And also in that, what you did is you reframed, which is becoming the narrator in your story. So when you're in those moments and I'm like, my eye is twitching, thinking about it, I'm like, oh, I've been there. When you're like, what am I going to do now? I feel it in my stomach and my eyes is when I'm stressed. To step back and say, okay, what's going to be the ending of the story? We're narrating, we're in the plot right now. Where's the plot twist? Who's going to be the hero? And change it and change the perspective and the learning from it. Let me tell you, it's a lot easier to give that advice. And so I am like you, like this hurts. This is hard. And so as I teach this, I mean, my 7-year-old will be like, you're a little bit short with us today. And I'm like, I know it. And it's got to be a few more days of this.
Yeah. Well, I just want to end with, you know, a little bit about the momhood stuff, because you talk about your 7-year-old. I have a 7-year-old and an 11-year-old. And I know you have a younger one. Mm-hmm. And you kind of went through the pandemic having that child, right? Yeah. So how isolating is that? But, you know, I know in your books, you know, one of your books talking about, you know, with children, how do you, especially with the electronics and all of the social media and everything that they're a part of right now, how do we get them to realize the work that needs to be put in and happiness? And, you know, my daughter came home yesterday, she was crying. She's like, everyone hates me. And I literally had to take her through the whole thing. I was like, that's not true. I know, like, give me the names of your friends. Well, that means it was like one kid And we already know he's just not, I'm like, well, that then don't hang out with him, you know? And she was upset about, I didn't give her ice cream. I was like, ice cream needs to be a reward. You were yelling at me. You hit me. You're not going to get ice cream. How do you talk to children about those emotions and feeling worthy?
One I've learned, no matter what I say, it's not good enough. So it's like, oh, who can I plant to say this? Cool aunt, or my daughter goes to therapy for anxiety and we're a team with her therapist. And so sometimes I'm like, you have got to tell her when she has anxiety and can't sleep that coming down to me isn't going to solve anything. And then she'll go, hey, guess what my therapist said? I should try this. And I'm like, oh, because I didn't say it. So sometimes our role, our relationship, and because cognitively, the older and older they get, they are supposed to detach from us. And so while we haven't changed our behavior, they start progressing towards wanting to leave the house because that's how we are designed for them to make that disconnection. And it hurts as moms to think, oh, where's this anger coming from? And then you're like, oh, this is biological. But for me, what I found, the proudest I've ever been at my daughter is the last year I was able to bring her to volunteer events. And so often I'm like, you know, if we're at home, they want to watch TV or, you know, they're focused on the wrong things. I'm like, man, I've spoiled our kids. But I'm like, I got her to volunteer. We delivered meals, to the senior home, and the elevator broke. So we're on 8 floors and she is carrying gallons of milk for 3 hours up and down stairs and delivering food. And she didn't complain one time. And she got to see how these people lived and how different it is from where we live and all sorts of things. And I was like, and then we also volunteered at Second Harvest Food Bank and she hustled because she understood the why. And so I think as parents, it's how can we give them a different perspective. And I didn't narrate any of that. I'm like, here's where we're going. And she had to see with her own eyes and understand the gratitude. But if I try and talk her through like a gratitude meditation or this, like, she's not going to listen to me. And so I'm like, how can I expose her to things for her to make her own connections and right. Set her up for a path of self-discovery? Because I just want to tell her how to do all the things. But it's not going to work.
It never works. Which is funny. There was a communications expert, at the MPI Connect we had here, who talked about how, you know, he's trying to get his kids to eat vegetables. And he's like, I can tell them all day, but he goes, you know, I give them options and then he'll just ask Alexa, what's in broccoli? Like, does broccoli like make your brain blah, blah, blah. And it correlated. It was like, yes, it's having something else possibly step in because they do not listen to us. And it is frustrating, but we did it to our own parents. So no, I love that. Elle, it's always a pleasure. I think we can go on forever and ever and ever. And I can't wait to the next time we do sit down and talk and, you know, be a part of understanding your study. And please invite me to one of these pop-up things. I know we've talked about it, but I will make sure that people are able to connect to you, know about your keynote speaking and what you do for people, because it is truly inspirational what you do to, you know, to get people to understand their happiness factor and how to get there. So I appreciate you being on the show. Thank you.